My name is Ian O'Neill, and this is How They Did It, a podcast where we learn filmmaking from those who've gone before us. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to How They Did It, a podcast for indie filmmakers, especially those just starting out looking to make their very first film, although anyone at any level can listen and learn. Jenna Lorenzo wrote, produced, directed, and starred in the movie Les Bombes, which was executive produced by Bobby Farrelly of There's Something About Mary fame. We discuss how she got the movie made, from writing and funding to casting and directing, plus everything in between. There's so much information to digest, so without further ado, here's the interview. Ladies and gentlemen, our guest this week, Jenna Lorenzo!
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, thrilled. Absolutely thrilled that you're here. So we'll definitely get into your film, Les Bombes. Great film. Available right now on Netflix. If you're listening, you can pause and go watch it and come back. I'm okay with that. And we'll get to that in a little bit. But first, let's learn a little bit about you. Like, tell us about yourself. You've been an actor for a long time. Am I right?
Well, I actually, I started out writing.
Really?
I started out writing, and I studied writing and directing in school. I did study some acting, but then once school was over, I started writing and creating content for online. And it's just easier to cast yourself when you don't have money to pay people.
Touché. Touché.
So I started out writing and directing, and I always liked acting. Absolutely. It just, for me, I like the sense of, there's a little bit more of a sense of control, I suppose, when you can bring pen to paper anytime, any day, you know, rolling out of bed in pajamas and you're all set.
I'm with you on that. That's what I enjoy most about writing, is I can do it anytime and I can do it anywhere, and I can lock myself away and nobody bothers me, and people know when the door's closed, leave them alone.
Yeah, totally.
He's writing. And I love that. But, you know, you've produced and directed, as you said, you've also produced. And when did you jump into sort of the filmmaking at all? Just jumping in?
Well, back in 2011, I made this web series called Parker and Maggie. And it was the first, the first time I sort of realized, because you use this term producers, and it's like, oh yeah, I'm going to find a producer, and then they're going to make everything magically happen, and everything's just going to be executed and come together, and it's going to be perfect. But then you realize everybody else is trying to get their own stuff that they're passionate about made, and you know, you slowly have to come to the harsh realization that you're going to have to produce it yourself. and it was great learning that, because it forces you into learning all of the necessary skills required to create a piece of content. And then you start to create an ensemble of people.
I lost you there a little bit. So I just lost you a little bit there. You have to create an ensemble of
people and teammates that you would like to continue to collaborate on in future projects, which I thought was so valuable, because there were certain people that I continued to work with, and certain people we just didn't vibe as well. And then over time, you sort of have your team of people that you just love working with, and there's a shorthand, which makes it so much easier to execute.
Right. So there's a trust issue there too, right? You got to trust them to do the things that you know they can do.
Yeah, absolutely. And with Les Bombes in particular, it was so important to have the people that I trusted, because I was doing a lot on that project, and having a second set of eyes that I trust, and having those people that I could, you know, be like, I'm so terrified, quietly in a private room.
Yeah, I shouldn't laugh, because that's exactly how I'm feeling right now.
Yeah.
I'm just terrified, but I'm so excited, but I'm terrified. I really am.
And it's good to have those people that you can be vulnerable with, and they can sort of pick you up when you need it.
Yeah, but it sounds to me too like you're surrounding yourself with people who are positive too. Like, they're picking you up instead of dragging you down. They're not saying, hey, this is a piece of crap, what are you doing? Why are you wasting your time? Go, you know, wait tables. See, shut up. It's like you need somebody in there. You need a group of people who are positive. You surround yourself with positive people and then positive things will result.
Yeah, like for instance, when we had a rough cut of the film, some of the feedback I was getting was because it was a happy ending, it like wasn't very indie or whatnot. And so I was talking to my editor about it, and I've worked with him since 2011, and he knows, like, for me, the happy ending was one of the most important parts of making this movie. But you start to hear it, and I'm like, maybe I should change the ending. And he was like, no, you know why you made this movie. You've been saying from the beginning how important a happy ending is in this space. And, like, having people that can sort of keep you on track when sometimes the armor gets chinked,
because it and come on, it's, you're not going to please everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on, you can't. Yeah. So you're making the film, but let's be honest, we make our films for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we hope that other people will just, you know, enjoy them too.
Right.
Because if you don't enjoy it yourself, if you're not doing it for you, if you don't like what you're doing, why are you doing it? I don't get it. And that's why I'm glad your editor said to you, look, you've got this thing in mind. Yeah. You've got a great ending in mind. Let's keep to your vision.
Yeah.
Don't let people skew it.
Yeah, because, you know, you all of a sudden you're lacking sleep and clarity, man. And making sure that you're surrounded by people that help. And that, you know, help maintain your clarity and don't confuse it in any way. Yeah.
Don't cloud it somehow. Like it's nice to have that clarity. Pardon me. Well, you know what? I know why you lost sleep. I'm going to tell you why. Because on Les Baum, which was your first full-length feature, am I right?
Okay. Yes.
You wrote it, you produced it, and you directed it. And one of those things is tough enough. Let's be honest. Like, one of those things is hard. Put three of them together, you're losing sleep.
And I was acting in it.
And you acted in it, too. That's true. Because that's the one thing I wanted to ask you, too, is how can you act in it while you're writing it? Because anytime there's changes, are you making those changes to the script?
Because we shot the film in 15 days, there wasn't a lot of time.
Hold it. Can you roll that back just a little bit, please? You shot that in 15 days?
Yes.
Wow. So what was the page count a day? Like, did you go by page count or are you doing scenes or?
Yeah, it was a lot of pages. It was a lot of pages.
Holy mackerel. 15. Okay, I'm writing that down. I'm aspiring to 15 days. If I could, I would. Are you kidding me? Come on.
Yeah.
But that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, so then you don't have the luxury of time to improvise too much. I mean, Bruce Stern has flexibility because he's Bruce Stern and, you know, there's stopping him. But he's got gems, and he's such a legend that, you know, he really helped elevate that role that didn't have much dialogue, and he, you know, gave Grandpa some of the best lines in the film.
Oh, yeah. There's one that comes to mind, and I'm thinking, did he come up with that himself, or did you write it? The pie line.
He came up with that.
Did he really?
Came up with that, and man. We all lost it. And I was like, that's definitely staying in there.
Watch the film, people. You'll know what we're talking about. Watch this film. So yeah, taking on all those roles. Why take on all those roles in the first place?
Yeah. So my intention originally was not to star in the film or direct it.
Really?
I wasn't going to do either of those. And I was thinking of playing maybe the supporting character, like the girlfriend role.
Right.
But I kept meeting with investors who wanted to meet the team. But without money, I couldn't lock in an actress and I couldn't lock in a director. And I did that for 6 years until finally I was like, I'm the team. Because I had no choice. And then all of a sudden it came together like relatively quickly. Cause I did a proof of concept of what that would look like. And it was called Girl Night Stand. It was a short film that went viral. And once that went viral, the financing quickly followed, but under the pretense that I'd be starring, directing And then when, you know, the project came together and we were shooting in 15 days and we got the cast that we got and Bobby Fairley came on as executive producer.
I felt
like I was kind of like punted into the deep end a bit, but sometimes there's no better way to learn than kind of go head first into the fire.
I mean, again, we have to remember this was your first film. So, but let's backtrack a little bit and just, if you could give us a short description of the film.
So a young woman played by myself brings her girlfriend home for Thanksgiving to introduce her to the family, but her coming out efforts are thrown off because her male roommate unexpectedly shows up and the family assumes that they're together.
Yeah. And we know who that was. No, we'll get to that in a second. Trust me. We'll get to the characters and to the actors. I'm blown away. But why this film? Why this topic? Why did you write this one?
Well, I felt like it was oftentimes the subject matter is presented in a very dramatic way. And I have always been a fan of comedy. I think that comedy sometimes makes it much easier to deliver, you know, what's the saying, like medicine with sugar.
Right,
you get people laughing and their defenses are down and you can deliver a powerful message in often more in a more accessible and hopefully relatable way. And I wanted to do a coming out story that did have a happy ending and it was relatable and funny and very much more so about the family dynamics. It just had this modern twist. So one of those broad family comedies that used to get made and don't so much anymore. And I was hoping that by leaning into the nostalgia of that and giving it an LGBTQ twist, it would feel like something that we had seen, but we haven't.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, it came off as fresh. I gotta be honest with you. It was very fresh. How long did it take you to write the film?
Well, you know, it took so many years to try to get it made.
Right.
So I just kept rewriting and rewriting. And so, from start to finish, it was 8 years in total, including the making of the film and the editing of the film. I spent about 6 years writing and rewriting. And you know, I was coming out in the earlier drafts, so they were a bit more angsty and angry and dramatic. I think the distance between being able to have that perspective and look back through a comedic lens served me well in the long term.
Yeah, it did. Here's the big question though. How did you fund the film? You talked about, you know, having this film for 8 years.
Like, yeah.
That's being in a relationship for a long time with that script. You really have to love that script. You have to love that story to be there for 8 years. So how did you go about funding it?
Well, I have met a handful of financiers, but again, I didn't have that team.
Right.
And honestly, once I sort of was like, I'm just going to do it and I'll be the team and everything else will fall into place. And it truly did. As soon as I made that decision, and I did that short as a proof of concept, my casting director who had helped with my short film, she said that someone she knew was looking for a script and she sent it to him and we were greenlit 4 months later.
Wow.
So it was like 6 years waiting for that moment. But then when that moment happened, it was very quick.
It just took off. So did you have a list of financiers that you went to? Did somebody give you an idea of who you should be talking to? Was this private funding?
It was private funding.
Oh man. Cause that's what I'm trying to do. And I'm trying to be a sponge here and just whatever you say.
I think like it's largely about sort of being, I don't know. I think there's sometimes as artists, we hold our aspirations close to the heart, but then nobody knows what we're trying to achieve.
Right.
And I think sometimes we have to be like, oh, I'm trying to make a movie, or making a movie. I'm looking for financing instead of I'm trying. And then, you know, hopefully when you're talking to someone, like they'll be like, oh, you know, I know someone or I know something. I think there has to be a willingness to sort of reveal the aspiration.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's because a lot of times people frown on it, don't they? They look at you and go, what are you, crazy?
Yeah.
Well, we are. In a way, we are.
Of course. It took me a long time I waited tables forever. And I remember like not being, I don't know. I just felt like I didn't want to tell people what I wanted to do because I felt like I'd be judged. And it's just such a waste of energy. And then I kind of got over that. And I decided I was just going to pitch everyone who came into the restaurant. I was never a good server, but I did learn how to speak very well. And, you know, I learned some of my best. I got some of my best industry contacts and mentors by doing that.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Seriously, that takes some cojones. That's wonderful. People are sitting down to eat, and it's like, hey, have you heard about this film that I'm trying to make?
Yeah.
Well, that's brilliant.
A little something I'm working on.
That's fantastic. And you actually got contacts that way. Did you get any money that way?
I got no money that way, but I met some of my best mentors.
Really?
That way.
Oh, yeah. My God. That's fantastic. Yeah. So when you, I'm sorry I'm stuck on the money. Did you offer up like percentages and points and, you know, shares or like what was the situation that you went into?
Yeah, so some points we did offer up, and that was pretty much it. I mean, my producers handled a lot of that
side
of the, but like there, we did offer points to certain people, right. And you know, but it depends on what does that mean necessarily?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's hard to. It's hard to pinpoint because you're promising something you have no idea whether or not it's going to have a return.
That's true. The return on investment on an indie film is pretty low.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty low. So how did you convince them, though? That's the thing. Was it the script that sold them?
Yes, the script was what was really what did it. We were able to get the script to Kevin Pollak. And Kevin called me on a Friday night and he said, I love your script. And he, you know, we chatted for 30 minutes and then he said, I'll see you in December.
Really?
Yeah.
So he was sold on it.
Yeah. He said, yes. He talked. Oh, I mean, he definitely called me and he was for sure vetting me. But, yeah. But he's so wonderful. There is not, honestly, there's no one in the cast that I truly fell in love with everyone, and they do feel like an extended family. I'm very close with, I saw Elaine Hendricks, who plays my aunt in the movie,
yeah.
And I saw Caitlin Maynor, who plays my girlfriend in the movie,
yeah.
And I saw the casting directors all last night. And then I was with Bobby and Elaine and Devram, who plays my brother,
yeah.
This weekend.
Oh my God. So you've stayed close to these
yeah.
people.
And Rob, who plays my uncle, he's like, I mean, they all feel like truly like family.
That's amazing. Well, that shows you how everybody cared about the film, cared about you. That's trust. That's amazing. Well, let's talk about that. But you landed, okay, Cloris Leachman and Bruce Dern. I mean, you got an Oscar winner and a 2-time nominee. How the hell did you pull this off? I love you. I need to just somehow crack open your brain and get that magic out of there. Holy cow.
Well, Kevin and Cloris and Bruce, they were all at the same agency. And once Kevin said yes, then we went for Cloris and Bruce. And one of the agents at that agency was able to vouch for me. And they showed Bruce, I know, my short film, and he liked it.
Right.
But they both really responded to the script. They thought it was funny.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I mean, it sounds to me, and I've preached this on my show, I don't know, since the beginning, it starts on the page. It really does start on the page. If you can get it right there, then look at the people that come on board who if they didn't like the script, you're not getting them. So you've got to put so much into that script. You put 6 years into it, so that's a lot of work on a script. Well, we know, so you know how – and Brandon Michael Hall went on to, you know, God Friended Me right after
Actually,
your
he did
film.
The mayor. He did the mayor first, and then he did
God
Friended
Me.
Yeah, so he did a mayor, and I think that lasted a season.
Yeah.
And then once that came off air, you know, everybody wanted Brandon, and he and God Friended Me was lucky enough to nab him. He's such a charmer and really a good solo as well.
Really? Well, he's a great actor, too. I got to tell you, the scene with him and Kevin in the car is one of my favorites. I love that scene because I'm a father and I just put myself in that position and I laugh my ass off. I just got to tell you. So thank you very much for that because, and you wrote that and it's, Like, that's great. Well, you got the male perspective perfectly. I don't know how you did it, but you did a great job. Good for you.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it was great. So, you casted these amazing actors. But well, let's not...
Our casting directors were so incredible. The thing about them is, like, it's Mia and Megan. And I always say Mia is, like, my guardian angel. And, you know, and that kind of commitment and passion from them was invaluable. Yeah. There'd be no way this project would have happened without them. And wow. So, yeah.
Yeah, see, I don't have a casting director. I'm the casting director because I can't afford one. And I'm doing non-union to keep it low. So I can't get a Bruce Dern. I would never be able to. So unless he's non-union.
Are you shooting it in Canada?
I am.
Yeah, I don't know what the rules are exactly. But
oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. And I'm not getting a Bruce Dern or a Cloris Leachman or a Brandon Michael Hall or Kevin Pollak. I love Kevin Pollak. Best bit on Letterman ever. So, yeah, you get these great actors. However you got them, good for you. Yeah, I'm glad you had a guardian angel there to help you. But now you've got to direct these people. And these are some serious actors. And this is your first time directing a feature film. You've directed before. Let's not forget. You did TV. You did even your concept trailer. You had to do that yourself, right?
Right.
Or your concept film, excuse me. But this is a different animal. How did you go about that? That must have been nerve-wracking for you.
It was. I mean, we were also moving so quickly, though, that I didn't have time to be too nervous. Because, you know, you're sort of there before the nerves catch up to you.
Right.
I had a phone conversation with Kevin before. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he had directed his movie, and by him telling me how he directed and how he likes to be directed, I already had an idea of the way in which he would appreciate being communicated with.
Right.
And Caitlin, who was a good friend of mine, so we already had a rapport. Cloris and Bruce, I was super nervous about because I hadn't met them. Obviously, they're legends. And we met very quickly in wardrobe, but then they're on set. And the first scene I had with Cloris was when we're in that room and she's telling me not to bring my side dish. And we're going back and forth.
That's the first scene?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, but
no pressure. No pressure at all.
I felt a huge, one of the greatest moments of my life so far is when she was reading her sides and laughing at the dialogue.
Oh.
And so that eased my nerves.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. That would be so soothing.
Yeah. And she also appreciated my sense of humor because... You know, she's very playful.
Yeah.
And she wanted to get going. And Bruce, I don't know where he was. It was supposed to be a different scene. And I was like, let's just switch it. We'll do our scene first. And when Bruce is ready, we'll do that scene.
Yeah.
But she had been going, Bruce! Bruce! and I was just trying to figure out what was happening. So finally, I was like, you know, Cloris, we're gonna do our scene first, and I was like, I'm gonna go out of here, and then you're gonna call for me, and then we'll go. And she was like, how do you want me to call for you? I was like, you know how you were just calling for Bruce, exactly like that. And then she started laughing, and we were good.
Oh my God, I'm sorry. I was screaming and yelling for Bruce. That sounds so good. I wish I was there. Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So it sounds like, but was everybody sort of needing a different kind of director?
Or
was really? So you had to sort of cater to each person.
Yeah, I think that was my impression. You know, just trying to look for what everybody sort of needs. You know, and some people need more hands-on, some people need less hands-on. And, you know, I found that the most important thing, and, you know, fortunately, not so fortunately on the day, but fortunately in retrospect, there was something going on that, like, I had to raise my voice and be like, this is what we're doing.
Right,
and
right.
Having the clarity of vision for sure gained the confidence of Bruce. And that was a lesson for me. And even when Bobby was on set, one of the days he had said to me, like, and I asked him, I was like, how would, when you guys were shooting these scenes, or what was your experience with this? And I could bounce something off of him the way he would communicate to actors. And he would be like, you know, some actors like to be told what to do, some actors don't. And just having sort of that ability to just learn like a sponge and then take that lesson immediately and apply it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a quick turnaround. Yeah. A lesson, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. But
you do as much research as, and you do as much preparation and you watch movies but then you get on the set and this is a whole other thing. Like you feel exposed and vulnerable and you're supposed to be the one in charge. And then who am I to tell these legends what to do? And you sort of have to just quiet all those voices and be like, oh, what is the vision I'm trying to execute? And then stick to the story and just kind of keep grounded in that.
Yeah. And I guess there's always that thing in the back of your mind that says they accepted this. They love the script.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you can play that over in your head to say, they want this. They want to be here.
Yeah,
they want to be here. And it was, well, congratulations on, I mean, it's a monumental task for your first film. But to put that kind of pressure on yourself, to have those kinds of people acting, wow, good for you. Like, that's just amazing. Seriously. So here's it, maybe in a word or a couple of words. What are you like as a director?
In terms of, I would say I try to be as specific as possible and clear.
Right.
And collaborative.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. It's important to be open because you walk in and, you know, you have to have your vision in mind, but when you're open to opportunities as they present themselves, and you're fortunate to cast people such as the people who, I felt really lucky to work with, they elevate the project. You know, there's a reason why they work so much. They're all very, very smart and, you know, like one of the Deirdre O'Connell, who plays my mother, she really would push me line by line. You know, she wanted to know what I wanted for everything and what she thought it was. And she likes to be very hands-on. And it really elevated the project. Elaine Hendricks, who played Aunt Maggie, she also would be like, you know, I think this line sounds like, I think this would be interesting if, and that's why you get so many great moments in the film because of that. So it is important to have a plan, but being flexible as well.
Right. Yeah. You know what? Because if you're not, you're going to miss some things. You're going to miss a great line by Bruce Dern. You're going to miss that, like Cloris Leachman yelling for, you know, her granddaughter to come in. Like you're going to miss those things if you're not malleable, if you're not willing to just take on their ideas too, because great ideas come from everywhere, right?
Yeah. I mean, nobody got into the industry because they didn't want to be creative. So there has to be some playground for that creativity.
And you're all in the same sandbox that day, so why not play?
Yeah.
Well, and you gave yourself, wow, 15 days. I got to say, that's pretty amazing. So to be able to get a little extra out of them, a lot extra out of them, when you had such a tight schedule is also kudos to you.
Oh, thank you so much.
No, not a problem. Listen.
It was the team. It's not me. I was surrounded by really excellent people.
There's something you have to listen to, people. And again, I don't want to harp, but you have to surround yourself with the right people. And you have to, if somebody doesn't feel right, it's not, everybody's a professional.
Right.
Say, listen, we're just not working. Let's part ways. Maybe we'll work on another project, but this one doesn't work. Let's get somebody in there who does. And that's what it sounds like to me. Like you had everybody, like you had all the pieces on the board. They were just the right pieces.
Right.
Including yourself.
Oh, thanks.
Right? Like, well, not just as an actor, because you did a great job, by the way.
Oh, that's sweet.
But as a director, as a producer, you know, as the writer, like you did so much. I'm astounded. I'm astounded. I mean, it's crazy. We're all crazy to get into this business, but to take on all of that, oh my God, Jenna, what were you thinking?
You know, sometimes you're left with no choice and you just have to kind of do it.
Well, and you did. And you know what? You must have learned. I mean, what an experience to have.
Yeah.
To draw on for your next project.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. Okay. Any advice for a first-time director?
I think it's most important to surround yourself with good people. I think it's really one of the things that I found to be so incredibly helpful was having, if you're working that fast, having a lot of conversations with the editor before production, having tons of conversations with him facilitated in so many ways, particularly catching problems before they could happen. And then also having him on set editing a rough assembly of the film while we were shooting, because we had two snowstorms. Like certain scenes had to be rewritten for being inside. And also with that, and like, you know, making sure things track when you are rewriting quickly to accommodate weather, for instance. But, you know, sometimes like looking at problems, instead of as problems, but as like potential, because, I know that like there was like a snowstorm rolling in and I had to rewrite this one scene. And then what we rewrote it to, it ended up being one of my favorite scenes in the movie. So, because I had this assembly because of my fantastic editor, and I was able to watch some of it after we wrapped one night, and it felt like the movie needed sort of a breath. And since we had a snowstorm rolling in, that scene where Caitlin Maynor, the actress who plays Haley, and I are in the motel room on the bed.
Yeah.
That scene wasn't there. We were supposed to be having that conversation in a very different, less intimate way out in the parking lot. But it's so necessary in the movie in terms of the pace and the breath and that would have never really happened had there not been a blizzard rolling in.
You know? It's a fortunate accident.
Yeah.
Wow. That's just amazing. That I thought that would have been one of the scenes that you'd written like on day one, and yet
Wow. Yeah.
Well, yeah, you just this fortunate time. So you got well, and that's the thing too about a writer and about a producer, and I guess even as the director, you have to be able to think outside the box, and because you know money doesn't solve every problem,
right?
You know, and that you showed that you can think on your feet and add to the film instead of take away. That was amazing.
Thanks. I think I do think just, I don't know where I heard that once, and I was like, I love that expression is, you know, don't see the problem, see the potential.
Yeah. Well, I gotta think like that. It's coming up. I know it's coming up. Oh, man. Oh, man. So for somebody out there, and I try to sort of skew this podcast to people who are just starting out and thinking about making their very first films, whether it be a feature film or a short film, whatever. But do you have any advice for somebody who's just thinking about making a film?
Like any advice at all?
Any advice at all.
I just think it's good to just make something.
Right.
I think sometimes we wait for the perfect opportunity to make our dream project. But sometimes it's good to make something, just make something. And then that you learn from that. And then you take those lessons and you make another something. And then it sort of snowballs. And so I felt like being able to just create something and put it online was also good preparation for when that happens in like a larger way. And because you learn quickly how ruthless people can be online, and it's good to sort of get that thick skin, and because it burns at first, and then you kind of get like it doesn't always. I don't, for me, it never just goes away, but I feel like my bounce back is quicker.
Right.
You know,
right.
I don't sulk for a month. Maybe it might be an hour. You know
what? Everybody gets bad reviews. Everybody on everything. And you're right, the internet, people are so anonymous and they're so brave. But, you know, here's what I would say to you. They haven't made a film.
Right,
and
right.
They have no guts to make a film. You right. had the balls to make a film. You made a great film. You put everything into your film. Everything. And it shows. So congratulations.
That's very kind.
And you know what? Fuck those critics. That, see how you're laughing right now? I like that. I like that a lot. Because you know what? Like I said before, you can't please everybody. You just can't. You can't. You make what you think is wonderful, and then you put it out in the world, and you hope people see it. And by the way, people, you can see it right now on Netflix, Les Bomb. Go look at it right now. It's a great film. Go look at it. You're going to laugh. Cloris Leachman dipping her finger into all of the dips. I loved that. Was that her idea, or did you write that?
So there are moments of it in the script, and then she just took it to a whole new level.
Oh, did she ever?
And it was magical.
Another one of my favorite moments in the script when she's doing that. And it's almost as if it's like no one can see me doing this, but I'm doing it. And I'm still talking to you while I'm doing it, but nobody knows. It was just wonderful.
Also, I took a this Thanksgiving, because we shot it in my actual home.
Really?
Yeah, that's my childhood. Oh.
That'll save you money.
Yeah, and they when my grandma was over, sitting in the same seat Cloris was sitting in, because I storyboarded at our Thanksgiving.
Oh, really?
And I put my family in every position, and I took pictures. And so when this year in Thanksgiving, it's like I feel like I've put myself in a state of perpetual Groundhog's Day. Like my grandparents pull in where they actually pull in, and my grandmother gives the olive oil speech every single Thanksgiving. But she reached into the dip, and she put her hand in her mouth, and then I took a video of her doing that, and I put it up against Cloris, and it's like it's so funny.
Oh man! Oh my God! It was great. It was just great. And I can imagine you. Yeah, now I can imagine every Thanksgiving is going to be like a reminder.
Every single one. Yeah.
Oh, my God. It was brilliant. So, listen, that's what I have to say. Congratulations on getting this film made.
Thank you.
Because there are people out there who talk about it, but there are very few who do it. So, good for you. Way to go. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Screw the critics. Okay, we're down to the big three. This is the final three questions I ask everybody who comes onto the show. What is the biggest filmmaking mistake you ever made, and how did you overcome it?
The biggest filmmaking mistake I ever made.
And don't say becoming a filmmaker.
The biggest mistake. You know, I got. So when I first started writing, I felt like I was writing what I thought people wanted to read. And it was only when I started writing stuff that was like true to my heart and very authentic, and oftentimes made me uncomfortable because it was like a little too close to the nerve. That was when things started to open up for me.
Right.
And I think the mistake is to like look at the marketplace and try to create content that you assume other people are looking for, versus telling the stories that are deeply personal to you.
That is some great advice, because if you do that, think about it. If you're trying to catch up with the market, you're never going to catch up with the market. It changes so quickly.
Right.
By the time you finish something, they want something else. So that's just a perfect example of right from the heart, you know, and you can't go wrong. You just can't. That's a great piece of advice. Thank you very much. Okay, so what is the best filmmaking advice you ever received?
Oh, it's so funny that you asked that. Well, I've gotten a lot of really great advice over the years, but this past weekend, the Farrelly brothers were in town, and we were hanging out with them down in Asbury, and they did this panel, and they were talking about how they always throw it out to their team of collaborators being like, you know, this is a team effort. If you see something, you have an idea how to make it better, don't be shy, speak up. And You're talking about how that makes everybody feel invested and involved, and it helps elevate the entire project because you're telling everyone you're open to their ideas, which makes them feel safe to share those ideas. And so in hearing that, I was like, that's just an incredible piece of advice in general. So I'd pass that along.
Wow. Wow. Well, it sounds like you did it on Lesbaum.
Yeah, it was, but you don't realize how we did it on Lesbaum. However, they have a whole they start a movie and they tell everybody that, right, like from the get go. And I was like, you know, on my next movie, I'm doing that.
I
want to take that nugget and apply it because I think that's such an incredible thing to bring to.
Yeah, can you imagine how safe people would feel after hearing that?
Yeah.
To be able to share some, hey, listen, I think I have an idea for a line. They won't be saying it like that. I'm saying, hey, I got an idea for a line. You know what I mean? It just changes the whole perspective. That's fantastic. That's a great piece of advice. Okay, tough question.
Yeah.
Name a film that inspired you. And I'll let you name more than one. But name a film that inspired you.
Yeah, I loved, growing up, one of my favorite films is The League of Their Own.
Oh, wow. There's no crying in baseball.
There's
what a line. I still use it. My wife and I still use it. Excuse me.
I love that movie. I love The League of Their Own. That movie had such an impact on me because all of the characters were so dynamic and it was such an amazing ensemble. They all just brought so much to that story.
Yeah. And female driven too, which is fantastic, which is, you know, as I was a single father of a daughter, I looked for a lot of that. And it was hard to find.
Yeah.
So that was one that was so great.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Well, I've been recently watching a lot of female driven stuff because of a project I'm working on now. And so I've been revisiting Bridesmaids quite a bit.
Oh. It's become a classic.
It is. It's a classic.
An instant classic. Oh my God.
I can watch that movie anytime.
Yeah, it's a great movie. Well, and again, it comes down to me, to the writing, and to the cast.
Yeah.
That cast, holy crap.
Yeah.
It's like the dream cast, right? Like, can you get all these people? Can you imagine the stuff that was flying around that room? Oh,
yeah.
Man.
I can't. That movie brings me so much joy.
Well, I'm glad to hear it because it brought a lot of people joy. And another good choice. Wow, man. You got good taste.
Thanks.
Okay, so you mentioned something there that you're working on. What's next for you?
Well, I have a new movie that I've written. And I partnered with a company. I can't say who it is.
Yeah, okay.
But we are starting to go out to cast.
Oh, wow.
So, but it's also, it's a comedy. It's a bit bigger scope-wise,
wow.
So we'll see.
Absolutely. Well, that's what you set the table for the next film, right? I mean, you showed everybody what you can do, and now it's like, I want her. That's what happened, didn't it?
I'm hoping. Let's spread that rumor.
Absolutely. Well, I'm happy to start it right here. Right
Thank
here.
You.
She is the it girl. You got to get Jenna Lorenzo. Come on, man. Get her. Get her now while you can. While you can afford her. Pick her up now. Oh, man. So where can people find out about what you're up to? Do you have a website or?
Yeah, I have a website, which is just my first and last name,
okay.
.com. I'm easy to find on Instagram and Twitter, all those social, though I am trying to be better with social media. But
yeah.
But yeah, I'm easy to find on my website.
Oh, man. Jenna, I can't thank you enough for coming today. Seriously.
No, thank you so much for having me. It's been such a lovely conversation.
Oh, people are learning things. This is the idea. You are so amazing. Thank you very much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, thank you for reaching out. And hopefully I will be watching your movie in the near future.
Fingers crossed.
That's our show for today, and I can't thank you enough for spending your valuable time with me. I greatly appreciate it. I really hope that you learned something from today's episode, and just as importantly, that you enjoyed it. As always, if you have any comments or questions about the show, please stop by my Facebook page at How They Did It Podcast. I'm on Twitter at HFilmmaking, and on Instagram at How They Did It Filmmaking. Please show your support for the show by subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Thanks again for joining me, and I'll be back with another show next week. Until then, keep shooting.